This is the story of the one. As head of maintenance at a concert hall, he knows the show must always go on. That's why he works behind the scenes, ensuring every light is working, the HVAC is humming, and his facility shines. With Grainger's supplies and solutions for every challenge he faces, plus 24/7 customer support, his venue never misses a beat. Call quickgrainger.com or just stop by. Grainger, for the ones who get it done.
Right, before we start the show, there's been some news that came out right after Brad and I finished recording. The MLBPA Communications Twitter sent a statement out basically saying that the season will start on time and spring training will start on time, and it's going to be a 162-game season rather than 154-game season, which is what the owners had come to the table with. Brad and I had this conversation about this deal. It looks like the MLBPA has said no. We'll see what happens. I'm sure there can still be some deals to happen, but this came out literally 20 minutes after Brad and I finished recording, so just wanted to update you with that just in case this new information changes the conversation. Though the conversation that Brad and I had was just still continually about the these two organizations, the owners and the players, just not able to get along. It's just frustrating to see how far apart they are and stuff. So anyways, enjoy the show. Thompson to Clark.
Bedrosian throws to Sandberg, and the pitch is grounded to second base. Thompson has it, throws to first. It's over. 27 years of waiting have come to an end. The Giants have won the pennant.
All right, Brad, it's February. We are back. Based on what I read today, and we can actually kick off the show here.
Yeah.
Which is that MLB, surprise, surprise, MLB and the Players Association differ on what to do here. But they want to delay the season until the end of April, which would mean that everything sort of gets delayed. So we've been talking about spring training. That would get delayed. Opening day would get delayed. And as well as shorten the season to 154 games, which historically is what it was before they expanded to 162. So that's kind of interesting. The players aren't exactly sure if that's the right thing, even though they'll get paid completely for the 162 games. So, you know, even the season is in influx already, and it's February. I feel like February is when I would be ready to go to the Giants fan appreciation thing, like at the beginning, you know, when they do it before the spring training starts. Like, it's like right around this time I'm starting to think, okay, am I going to go to Pac Bell Park and go, you know, check out the interviews and stuff. So like, it feels like baseball is coming, but with this announcement, I'm not quite sure. It may be delayed for us a little bit.
Well, and it's funny you say that, because right before we started recording, my mother-in-law is great. She knows I just, you know, love baseball. So every Christmas she gets me a baseball ballparks calendar. So the big one, so I get a big one and I hang it in the garage because I like to mark on there, like, I aerated the lawn this day. You know, so it's nice to have a calendar. And then when I'm working out in the garage, and I like to work out there often, and I have my beer fridge out there, so I hang out in the garage, I can see all the ballparks and read the little stats on them and stuff. So this year, my father-in-law did the ordering, and he accidentally ordered a mini calendar. So then she told him, you go back there, you order them a big one. So I ended up getting two calendars for Christmas, a little mini one. So that one's in my den now. So I just flipped it before we started recording to February. So yeah, like you said, that's the month now. We're here, man. I mean, this is like, I flipped it and I go, oh my gosh, like in 2 weeks, like, who cares about the Super Bowl? I mean, you're a Niner fan, I'm a Rams fan, neither of our teams are in it, so who gives a crap? I mean, we're going to watch.
At least you got a new quarterback.
Well, yeah, we got a new quarterback, so that'll be fun. But I mean, this weekend, like, I'll have the game on, but, you know, there's no parties because of COVID or anything, but we've got a bunch of cool puzzles. I like to hit puzzles during a big game sometimes because it's just kind of fun to do. Mm-hmm. So we've got some Disney puzzles we're going to hit and eat some, you know, bad stuff and whatever. But then like the week after that, pitchers and catchers should be reporting. And that's kind of what they're talking about. The players are like, yeah, that's fine. You want to give us 162 game pay for 154 games possibly, But from what Ken Rosenthal is reporting on the Athletic, reading that article, it doesn't sound like anywhere in there is wording to guarantee them pay for 162 games. It's more of a suggestion. But then further down the article, it gets really kind of weird where they want to or MLB wants to kind of hand over to Manfred, say like, hey, man, here's some extra stuff you can do in case of COVID. You have the power to shut this down. You have the power to shut that down. And the players are like, no. If you're going to do all that, we want that wording in there to say 162 games guaranteed, even if we play 20 games.
Right.
We want that service time. We want that guaranteed 162 games. And I get that from you look at a lot of these players, and some of these players, you know, their life in the MLB might be 3 years.
Yes.
And so they want that money. They don't want to get, 31, 32 years old. They don't get to play that season, and all of a sudden they get bumped out for younger talent, and they never got that third season. That's a huge deal, and I feel for them, and I get that.
The other thing that was interesting in Rosenthal's article is something that we've been asking about, which is, when is the universal DH, or are we getting the DH in the National League? And so he said that I'll actually read from the piece. He says that the only way that they'll do this is if the players agree to expanded playoffs like they did last year. Now, the reason why they agreed to expanded playoffs last year is so they could make up some of the money because the season was so short. And so he said that the players fear the inclusion of additional teams in the postseason for the second straight year will reduce club spending by disincentivizing competition. So if there are 20 teams, actually, what were there, like 18? What, no, it was 16 teams in the playoffs last year, right?
Yeah.
So if half of the teams make the playoffs, and you know that you only have to beat out half of the teams, does that limit the amount of money that you're willing to pay some of the players? And I think that's definitely a concern.
Yeah.
He also wrote that they also think it would cheapen the regular season and result in additional physical wear and tear. So extended playoffs means more games for sure. And the league sees competitive concerns as less of an issue. Most rosters are close to set, and most of the top free agents are already signed. So there is such a lack of trust between the players and the owners. It's ridiculous because the players are like, thinking like the worst of the worst, like, oh, you want us to do this so you can spend less money. Oh, you want us to do this because then if we get hurt, then maybe that's, that works in your favor and somehow. So such a distrust between both of these organizations. And I mean, I get it, but you hate to see it because, it just shows it's almost like, if you're a fair boxing fan, like the promoter and the fighter, there's always like distrust between them. I never thought baseball would be that bad to the extent of where you think of the owners as liars. Right. But it's, he didn't actually say this in the article, but it makes me think that, these players think that these owners are not thinking of their best, not thinking of the players for their best health, their best care. The players are the big part of the game, and the fans go see the players, but the owners still sort of feel like, this is not basketball. We're still in control here. Whereas basketball, it is very much like a 50-50 thing, I feel. Like the players have absolutely gone out there and said, we need more power, and have gotten it. But I don't see that with baseball at all.
No, and it's been going on for so long. I mean, God, us old timers remember 1994. I mean, that was a rough season because, of getting chopped off right at the halfway mark. And so a lot of that bled over the years. And I get it. I mean, if you're a player and you're in the players organization, players association, you want all this stuff in writing. I mean, it just makes sense. sense. It's like, you know, if, you know, when you were a kid, your parent came to you, and I hate to look at this as a, you know, a parent and a kid relationship, because it should not be that way. Without the players, you're not getting revenue. Without Bryce Harper getting signed by Philadelphia, you're not getting as many people in the stands. You know, it kind of goes both ways. But when you were a kid, if your parents said, hey, you know, you clean your room and you can have $5, and then you clean your room and you go out to them and go, hey, I cleaned my room. And they go, well, you didn't get the stuff underneath the bed, so sorry, no $5. Get that in writing before you do it and say, what has to be done?
Or you did it. $2.50 job. Here's half.
Yeah. So get that in writing and say, well, what does a clean room mean? And I use that as an example because I can't tell you how many times I go to my girls and I go, hey, can you guys clean up the room? And they go, Dad, what do you mean by clean? What do you mean? What do I mean by clean? I mean, if it doesn't belong there, put it away. That's awesome. I don't know what else to tell you. So the negotiation in this house is amazing. I've got two lawyers.
You're outnumbered, which is the problem.
I got a wife, two daughters, and two female cats. So I'm screwed.
You just better wait. You just wave the white flag. I'm going to lose no matter what.
I can't. And it was speaking of the garage earlier. I can't tell him how many times I just go, okay, sounds good. And I head out to the garage, open the beer fridge, crack a beer, and pull out a chair, put on some Sinatra, and just look out at the stars. It happens often.
So, but, I mean, I guess bottom line is this is going to be an ongoing negotiation. I imagine that as we get closer to the beginning, that's when there's going to be more of an impetus to get things done, which sucks because I'm sure for the players, they would want to know, especially in this time with the pandemic where their schedule is different, right? Their future is different. They're unsure. There's a lot of uncertainty and they would like to know, okay, what can we expect here? So for the players, I would hope that they get something done quickly. But if this is how it usually works, I think that it's probably going to go down to closer to the beginning. And, you know, we'll see what happens because I think with this kind of season where we saw it last year, there was the positives. We saw football treats the COVID positives. Basketball's having their own issue. Even if you get the season going and everything is hunky-dory, there is still the worry about the virus and what happens and, you know, will there be fans and all of that stuff. So just such a crazy season. And, you know, like we've always said, you know, hopefully it's coming to an end fairly soon, but I can imagine, you know, and look, I'm not only 100% pro player. I do more generally sit on the pro player side, but you know, the owners, I think fans perceive owners as a little bit stubborn, a little older, only worried about money. And I don't see the Giants ownership like that. You know, the Giants have an owner that or a majority owner who's getting a little flack these days because of his politics. But I don't see their ownership as just like this money hungry organization. Like the Giants players seem to love playing for this organization. So, but you know, we'll have to see what happens and we'll update it here. And I just want baseball to happen. I want it to be smart. I want the players to feel like they're getting a great deal. I want the owners to feel like there's a good product out on the field. Maybe if we figure out a way to improve on the Manfred situation, that'll probably be great. But otherwise, like, you know, there are just some things that I think we can get some of those things and it doesn't have to be perfect. And I think fans will still be pretty happy.
Well, and I think the big key to all of this, too, and again, reading the article and Rosenthal drives home the point and, you know, you forget about it as you're reading the article. They're playing this year. I mean, if the association, the Players Association, does not agree to this and they say, no, we're not going to start a month later, blah, 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 they're playing. They're still going to play. So there's a deal in place. They're still under the old CBA, which expires on December 1st of this coming, you know, this year here, 2021. But the owners are just saying, we want to make this safer for you. We want to give it one more month, more vaccinations. Maybe we can get people in the stands that way. you know, maybe we can gather less people together. But if the Players Association says, no, we're good, then they're reporting in a week or two. And then spring training games start in, let's see, I wrote it down here because it's very important for us. 26 days from now, the time we're recording this, 26 days, the Giants have their first spring training game. So if the Players Association says no, we just want to do what we're doing, then that's what's going to happen. There's no lockout. There's no strike. There's nothing that's going to happen. Now, that could happen after December 1st when they start negotiating, because like you said, the players or the owners are saying, let's start a month later. And oh, by the way, let's throw in this expanded playoffs. And the players are saying, well, cool, you want to do that? Let's have a DH, universal DH. And then the owners are saying, no, we don't want that. So you know what? Save all that for after December 1st. Play the season as it's going to get played and just go from there. So, and that's what kind of we're looking at this point.
All right. Couple of things that we're going to talk about today. The next topic will probably be pretty short, which is the Hall of Fame situation. Nobody made it this year,
it'll be short.
I think I predicted that, by the way, when we talked about this earlier. We're going to talk about the new Giants, second baseman, third baseman, infielder, left-handed hitter. And then we'll wrap it up by, we talked to Darren Chan, KNBR's audio engineer and producer last week, which was awesome. And it made me think, because he talked a lot about the announcers, the announcing team, how good that team is, and you know how renowned they are in all of baseball. And I wanted to go through and kind of pick your memories of previous Giants broadcasters as we end this show. So that'll be fun. All right. So before we get going, did you want to mention your beverage for tonight?
Oh yeah, sent you a picture of it. I'm gonna post it on our Instagram as well. My wife hits Sam's Club every now and then, and they always have some interesting stuff there in terms of whiskeys and bourbons and different things. So she sent me a picture, and I'm sure some people have heard of this. I had never heard of it, but she mentioned an article in the Martha Stewart Living magazine, which I do not read. my wife reads it. So she said, hey, I read this article, and here's a picture of this whiskey that was in an article in there. And it's called Uncle Nearest. And it's the 1884 small batch whiskey. And there were two different ones there. There was the 1884 and another one that's just a regular whiskey. This one's 93 proof. And the story behind it apparently is that there was a back in the day, Jack Daniels, when he was making or going to start making his whiskey, there was a slave named Nathan Nearest Green, and he taught Jack Daniels a certain liquor making technique that actually made Jack Daniels what it is. So there was an author named Fawn Weaver who looked a little bit more into this, and she went ahead and started a distillery and said, well, I'm going to talk to Nearest Green's family and get them on board as well. And we're going to start making whiskey the way that he made it and taught Jack Daniels to make it. So they ended up hiring the great, great granddaughter of Nearest Green, Victoria Edie Butler. And she became the first African-American woman to hold the title of a master blender at any distillery. So this is the product of that. And I haven't had whiskey, like, you know, I drink bourbon, I drink scotch and whatnot. I haven't had like just straight sour mash whiskey in years since I've had Jack Daniels. This is phenomenal.
Wow.
I am blown away by this. It's $50 for this particular bottle at Total Wine, but at Sam's Club, it was running for $32. And that's the regular price. So I told my wife after I had a sip, I go, next time you're there, just buy two bottles because it's like the price of one at Total Wine. I want this on hand. This is a sitting back, listening to music, relaxing. This is the good stuff, man. man.
I'm actually going to go on Total Wine. Yeah. The next time that my wife Crystal runs out of wine,
so tonight,
we just order it. We order it in bulk.
Yeah.
And I'm going to buy that. I'm going to have you. I think you sent me the picture already, but yeah. I've actually heard this story. Another friend mentioned this to me. And so, yeah, it's an awesome story and I definitely want to try it out. So,
well, and it's appropriate too. Today is February 1st that we're recording this. It is the first day of Black History Month. So this is an appropriate drink for that. I'm just completely floored by this. Because I thought, oh, I'm going to have whiskey again. And I had bad experiences with whiskey in college, especially Jack Daniels. And so I thought, well, it's going to bring back some bad memories and this. And that. No, I mean, this is smooth. It's very complex, lots of caramel flavor to it. Nice. Just kind of some real warmth to it. It is just excellent. I put one ice cube in it and I love it so far.
All right, can I ask you a question about, and you don't have to answer this honestly if you don't want to, but for you and your wife, with the way that the pandemic has kept us inside of our house all the time, has drinking in your household gone up because of it?
Early on, it did because it was more of a gimmick.
Yeah.
You know what I mean? Like you're sitting at your desk working, 4:45 hits and you're like, hey, I'm finishing up some work here that's going to take me past 5 o'clock. I'm going to crack a beer now. So early on, it was a bit of a more of a gimmick. Like I can do this and I can have two. And then the next day I don't have to wake up so early and this and that. So, and that kind of faded out around June. I'm usually like a one drink a night person. And on the weekends, you know, sometimes I can have two on a Friday and then Saturdays is when I cut loose. And that's, so I think I've gone back to, over the last few months, back to my pre-pandemic drinking, which is like a drink a night, you know, either a beer or a bourbon or a scotch. Early on it kind of took off a little bit. It never got out of hand, but it got out of calories, you know, it got to the point where I was like, oh, why am I not losing any weight? I'm working out all the time. And oh, it's the two or three drinks a night. What it is. So, yeah. But what about you guys?
So definitely it's just become a more casual deal for us, I think. And I think we've sort of realized that. And we are trying to like figure out if we want to go more on like a schedule, like, oh yeah, you know, we'll have a couple drinks on the weekend, but during the week we'll just kind of chill out, because I think, like you said, it became a gimmick. And then all of a sudden, you know, we're like, oh, we're going to be inside all this time, you know, we should at least, you know, how do we deal with this? And I think like we're like, even tonight we were like, maybe we shouldn't have a drink. And then I was like, oh, but I got the podcast. And so then we're both like, okay, let's just have a drink and be fine. But I think what we're going to try to do is like throughout the week try and really cut back, because we both realized that it just became like way too casual. Yeah. And I think when things just become way too casual, they kind of lose their specialness and it just becomes like, oh, this is just kind of what we do. And we don't, you know, we don't want drinking to become that. So yeah. I think we're going to try and, you know, figure out like what is the right amount. 'Cause like when you go back into non-pandemic world, the, you know, life just sort of, it just resets you and you're like, oh, I can't have this glass of whiskey on Wednesday night at midnight because I actually have to wake up and go into the office tomorrow, you know?
Yeah.
So what I did decide, I wasn't going to drink. I was just going to have a little bit of cold coffee. But then when I was like, ah, we're doing the podcast and it's fun, you know, this is kind of our thing. And so then I did get a little bit of, I got a little bit of the Jameson IPA.
Go. I still got to try that. I got to put that on the cart because I want to try. I make cold brew at home and I really want to try that. I want to see what it tastes like.
Yeah. So mine is sort of normal, but I did like yours. I'm going to have to try that out. Okay. Let's talk about this Hall of Fame stuff really quickly. So you had a bunch of people just decide, I am not going to vote for anybody. I think there was 14 ballots that were completely empty, sort of rebellious in that way. And thus, Curt Schilling, Barry Bonds, Roger Clemens. I don't think Bonds and Clemens make it anyways, even if those 14 people voted. But Schilling was pretty close. He did lose a little bit of steam this year, probably because of him sort of being a bigot. Like, I think that would make a difference.
Yeah.
But no one goes into the Hall of Fame. And I think, you know, that's a political statement. It is continuing, you know, there's just a certain amount of people who are never going to vote in Bonds and Clemens because of the steroid thing. And now it looks like Schilling is going to be shut out too. And he, you know, he went out there and he's like, I want off the ballot. I want the Veterans Committee. And I'm just like, dude, the Veterans Committee, you just put them on blast. They're not going to vote for you now. Like, no way.
You know, they're going to be. Does he need to apologize? Does he need to do? And he's not going to.
No, he won't.
But if he were to, if he really wanted to get in the Hall of Fame, would he have to apologize? Which again, I don't think is right either. I mean, I don't obviously agree or believe in any of his politics or any of his nonsense. But if he went out and apologized for all of it, at that point, what does it mean? What, you know, it's already been out there. He's already said it. If he apologizes for it and then they go ahead and vote him in, it's garbage anyways. So he's just going to be out. He's not going to make it in. And you know, there's not many people I say I'm fine with that, because I really think, you know, with everything Bonds did and whatnot, he should be in. With everything Clemens did, he should be in. They played in an era where it was all over the place. But what Schilling is doing is not right for the country, for every human being in the country. And so I'm fine with him not being in. I'm cool with that.
Yeah, look, I think when you are holding out guys because of this morals clause, and this is why Bonds and Clemens are held out, right? Because there is a morals clause. You have Joe Jackson, Shoeless Joe Jackson, not in the Hall of Fame. Pete Rose, not in the Hall of Fame. I'm sure many others, because of this. This is an actual interesting example, because Curt Schilling is probably a Hall of Famer, but he's also not a surefire Derek Jeter Hall of Famer. He's going to be close to that number of whatever that 75% number is. But when you add this other piece, this is part of the morals clause. Like, you are a bigot in 2021, let alone when the Hall of Fame was created. Like, this kind of behavior, you don't want this to represent what should be the creme de la creme, especially if you're still holding out these other guys. If the Hall of Fame was like, you know what, steroids bad, racism good, that's a bad sign.
Right.
You know? So I'm fine with it. I think if he would have shut his mouth for the last 3 years he's in, and then they would have probably been a little bothered that he was in based on the stuff that he says. And then, so for the Hall of Fame, it's actually good that he's, you know, kind of became a weirdo these last few years, because now they are able to utilize their votes and keep him out, because, you know, they're not going to want him to represent what that Hall of Fame supposedly means to a lot of people.
But here's the scary thing. You say that, and Schilling was the leading vote getter of all of them, ahead of Bonds and Clemens. I mean, if they really renounced racism and, you know, awful politics and everything else that Schilling stands for, he shouldn't even be the number one vote getter. It should be Bonds, Clemens. You go down the list and Schilling should be at the bottom. But that's the scary fact of it all, is, you know, the voters knew all that stuff, and yet he was so close to getting in. So, and this wasn't something that popped up the last month.
Yeah.
Like you said, it's been 3 years. It's been 4 years. It's been however long he's been at it. And so that's the part I don't quite understand. And we may never get. I mean, you know, we know where almost half the country stands, and we know where the other half of the country stands. Yeah. So, you know, that being said, that's the scary part about this whole thing. But
yeah, totally. Totally. Okay. So enough of that. Let's talk about.
Whoa. What? Let's not go too far here. We have somebody that dropped off the ballot.
Okay.
Forever. and we won't see him back on the ballot, and that's Rally Zito.
Oh, yes.
He got 0.2% of the vote. And so Rally Zito, I am sad to report, will not be in the Hall of Fame, at least at this point of his career.
If you looked at like the first, I don't know how many years would that have been where he looked like he was going to be, you know, in the mix, right? And then the career fell off after he signed with the Giants.
Let's go first 4 years.
Yeah. Interesting guy, comes out of the USC, plays for the A's. They got the Aces with him and Hudson and Mulder. And he's kind of the quirky one, the kind of the cool, like John Mayer-ish type of personality. And then he signs that contract with the Giants and becomes corporate Zito and just falls off the cliff a little bit.
Cuts the hair, like, yeah. So is it Samson and Delilah? Cuts the hair, and then he just is not the same. But yeah, those first 4 years, 2002. Cy Young Award, 23-5, 2.75 ERA, 2002. I mean, just, you know, if that Zito would have kept going, or even just, you know, a portion of that Zito, we'd be talking a little different today, I think. But yeah, so he falls off the ballot. He's not coming back on it, and was pour one out.
Yeah, pour one out for Zito. Barry and Roger aren't getting in, no matter how badly we wish that they would, but yeah. So all right, let's talk about the Giants' new middle infielder here, Tommy La Stella. I feel like he's been in the league long enough to where I should know a little bit more about his career, but I was like kind of digging through, because his first big league season is 2014, and he's really like just the ultimate like Punch and Judy hitter. And then in 2019, in just 292 ABs, he hits 16 jacks. So last year, in the pandemic season, 196 ABs, 5 jacks, he hits 280. He's just kind of, would you call him giantsy? Like, can play multiple positions, doesn't strike out, sees, you know, lots of long ABs, kind of the perfect Zady type of player.
Well, I think he is Zady-y, is what I think he is. I mean, and that, you know, and Zady, the past couple of seasons, I've noticed a trend here. He is kind of putting teams together like I do in out of the park baseball. You know, you don't want to spend too much. You don't want to lock guys up for too long. You want to leave your options open after a couple of seasons. And so La Stella on a 3-year deal, that's a huge deal for Zady right there. 3-year deal. I don't even know if it's official quite yet.
There's like a weird holdup going on somehow, but yeah, and it's all the beat writers are writing about him. So,
yeah. And I think they were still hashing out details, and then you've got the whole physical thing, and with COVID that always takes a little bit longer. But I don't think it would be reported on if it wasn't going to happen at this point. But yeah, like you said, 2019 hit 16 home runs. He discovered the launch angle, I think is what it is. And he hit 295 that year. But the reason why we don't know much about the guy is because his career high in games is 123.
Yeah.
And you know, in one season. Before that, it was 93 games, 33, 74, 73, and then 123, and then 80, and then 55 last year, which is 55 out of 60, which is, you know, almost a complete season then last year. Last year, he only hit 5 home runs, 25 ribs, and hit 281. But, the one thing mostly being reported on, which is, you know, just awesome to see, and I think this was Baggerly who wrote this nice little article about him. He has a 5.3% strikeout rate. And last year, Major League Baseball was at 23.4. That's almost, so Major League Baseball, you figure every four times somebody's up, they strike out once.
Yeah.
As a whole, as Major League Baseball, he was striking out 5% of the time, and that's easily the lowest. So he struck out 12 times last year in 228 bats and walked 27 times. I mean, that's Tony Gwynn-esque, mm-hmm. right there, you know, without the batting average, but still, that's every time he strikes out, he walked twice. That is what Zadie's looking for. Guys who can get on base. It's that blueprint, that Billy Beane blueprint that Zadie came from. And he's trying to put that back together again with the Giants. And then you get a couple of pop guys, that could hit the ball out of the ballpark, but getting those guys that can get on base, can hit for a little bit of power and can play three different positions. I mean, Listella can play second. He could play third. He could play first base. So they've got a backup to Belt, who had heel surgery. You've got a backup to Solano and Longoria, who are both right-handers, and Listella is a left-hander. So you get that left-handed bat that the Giants have wanted all offseason. Still probably looking maybe for another left-handed outfielder. But this is great. I mean, I love this. I love these moves so far. And I'm not just, you know, I'm not just drinking from the teat. I'm loving all these moves because it's exciting baseball. It's fun baseball. If you've ever played out of the park baseball, and I keep going back to that, if you've got guys you can plug in, this guy's cold. Cool. I've got this guy on the bench who could hit 300 and he's a lefty, so I can plug him in against righties. No problem. When you've got different things you can do, you've got options, you can move guys around, you have different ways of winning ball games. And for the Giants last year, if they would have had Listella, that's a couple more wins. Of course, Listella hit a big home run against Trevor Gott in the ninth. So that's take one loss away right there. And then we're in the playoffs. So, I mean, little things like that just make a difference.
Yep, absolutely. So this is a little bit Yastrzemski-esque because if you look at his baseball reference page, what you'll see is Listella is actually going back and forth between AAA and the bigs up until like 2000 and hold on. I had it up here all the way through 2018. It looks like, no, 17. So he's not even a full-time big leaguer until 2018, like from 2012 through 2017, he's kind of going back and forth and back and forth and back and forth. And now I think he's like 32, right?
Yeah. So now he's 32 yesterday, actually.
So he's a piece now, which reminds me a little bit of the same kind of curve for Yastrzemski. So Yastrzemski, and they're both they're like, I think Yastrzemski's like 1 year younger maybe than Listella, but Yastrzemski from it's even worse for him because he's just going AAA, AA, AAA, 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 and then finally gets to the Giants in 2019. Didn't even make. How can you not make the big league club with the Orioles until your year 28 season? Like, this is the Orioles.
Oh, they were awful.
And finally the Giants get him, and he hasn't. He's been back to Sacramento. Like, he played in Sacramento for part of the 2019 season, and then he was up with us for the majority of it. So it's like these guys who, you know, for whatever reason, they're not seen as like these prospects, the Joey Bart or the Lucky Luciano kind of players who you kind of like, you're guiding them through the system so that they don't have to go back and forth. But guys like Listella and Yastrzemski, I haven't seen Dickerson's page, but I'm sure Dickerson's sort of similar in that way, that they're not like those top prospect guys who you make room for and who you create, you know, you create pathways for them. They're just fighters. Like, they just don't give up, and they try to improve every year to get to that next level. So you like that, you know, the Giants are more scrappy than they are, you know, like the Padres or the Dodgers, who just have all of these, like, you know, A plus prospects. But the Giants, you know, they La Stella fits that scrappiness profile, and I like it too. And I just hope that I hope that in the scrappiness of the team that some of these prospects do make it up, because you do need talent. You do need a Tatis. You do need a Machado, right?
Yeah.
And so hopefully one of those guys does hit, so that you build this team of guys who are working their butts off and who might not be the top level talent, but they work so hard and they improve so much that they actually are really great big leaguers, and you have this great mix. I think that would be really great for them. So that's what I'm hopeful for. Like, Zadie has a type, you know. Zadie, I'm sure when he was dating, he had a type, because he sure as hell has a type with a baseball player.
And if you could fill a team with that type,
yeah,
you can win a lot of ball games. I mean, this team, it's hard to say. I mean, you know, you've got the Dodgers in front of you, defending fake World Series champs. You've got the Padres. And so can you win with a team full of guys like this? Like you said, no, you still have to have a Tatis. You still have to have a guy who's going to hit 30 home runs, probably. You know, 2010, 12 and 14. Did you need that? No, you didn't, because you had dominant pitching. Well, this Giants team does not have dominant pitching. So they got to have a mix of both. They've got to have the type of pitching they have now, which is a bunch of scrappy guys, guys who are reclamation projects, who go out there and can, you know, turn things around, because Bannister and his guys have got them dialed in, and Andrew Bailey. And then you throw in a bunch of guys that you can mix in and create a good lineup night in and night out to compete. And you can win, you know, 6-4 ball games, and things we couldn't do back in the early 2010s. We had to win those games 3-2. We had to make sure that B. Weezy was on in 2010. We had to make sure that, you know, 2012, Romo was on. Now it's kind of like, well, can we get a couple guys on base and get an accidental home run? Absolutely. You can get a 3-run shot and you can get right back into a ball game. Something we haven't seen as Giants fans in a long time. But speaking of La Stella and like you said, you know, scrapping it out and punching it out, when you look at his minor league stuff, he's been that guy, which is great. You know, going all the way back to 2012, A-ball and rookie ball combined, he struck out 25 times and walked 40 times. And that's in 376 plate appearances, hit 300 in the minors. So, I mean, you know, you walk 40 times and you strike out 25. That's a guy you want on your team. He's going to find a way to get on base. Yeah, he'll put the ball in play. Maybe he won't put it in play loudly, but he'll put it in play. And if you need to move runners along, that's what you got to do. So,
okay, if you were to predict,
yep.
Is he going to be better, the same, or not quite as good as, like, the best version of Joe Panic?
Better.
You think so?
Yes, absolutely. Because Panic was, Panic could get on base, great defense. And that's the one thing lacking from La Stella, though. So maybe I'll say even.
Okay.
Because you have to take away a little bit of that defense, but he's going to have the pop. Joe Panic didn't have the pop. La Stella is going to have the pop. Left-handed hitter at AT&T. Do we have scrims up? Do we have scrims up to keep the ball from getting knocked down? We don't know yet, but we're going to have the big part of the yard. Are they going to shade him to triples alley? Probably. Can he pull the ball down the line? Probably. So I think I'm going to give him a little bit of an even on Joe Panic, with more flexibility, because you can go third, you can go second, you can go first base. So,
yeah, the flexibility is key with him. And that's what, like, I was trying to think of another player who was, you know, and Joe Panic's also left-handed, also put the bat on the ball. But yeah, I think if he's better than that version of Joe Panic, then I think that's a really good player.
Is he going to break his belt on a diving for a ball on a double play? Probably not. Probably not.
Okay, so to end this show, I wanted to talk about some broadcasters of our youth, because when we were talking to Darren last week, I just got in that like mode of like KMBR, and when I was a kid watching and listening to games, and I always really, really loved knowing who the broadcasters were. And so I'm going to go through only eras in which you and I would have possibly been able to watch.
Okay.
And we'll go through TV, and I'll just go through some random people and ask you if you remember, and then we'll go through radio as well. Won't be too long. We don't have too much time here, but just some names that I'm just pulling out. I'm like, oh my God, I remember him. So we'll start on the television side.
Yeah.
1974 to 1987. And the 1987 year was his last year, and I'm wondering if it was because Will Clark cussed on national TV when they clinched the championship, or they clinched the NL West. Gary Park. I remember Gary Park. He did television for the Giants from 1974 to 1987.
And I posted that not too long ago on our YouTube channel. You can see the Will Clark cuss fest.
F-bomb.
You can see, yeah, I think I have the bottom of the ninth on there. Giants clinch it with another guy. Can I throw out another name?
Yeah, go for it.
Calling that game, Steve Fizioc.
I was going to bring him up.
They have him, I'm looking at a Wikipedia page right now. They have him 1988 to 89 on TV, but he called that game in 87. So I think they mixed that one up.
I wonder if he was a fill-in or something.
He could have been, because they have Ron Fairley as 1987, but I remember Fairley and Hagen on radio in that time.
Yeah.
But yeah, Steve Fizioc with the call of the little looper to left, the last out. And I think Hackman goes all the way back to the wall and catches it at the wall, like up against the wall, arm up. I mean, it was close to being a home run, but in a one run game, and he called it a little looper to left. I'll never forget that one. But yeah, I definitely remember Gary Park. Early memories there. Yes.
All right. So this guy is the broadcaster of our youth. From 1982 to 1986, then he goes for 2 years. He goes and does Yankee games. Comes back in 89 when the Giants go to the World Series. Through 1992, Hank Greenwald.
He, if it weren't for Hank Greenwald, I honestly don't know if I get into broadcasting. Hearing him call games was just outrageously awesome. He was so talented. He had such a great sense of humor.
Dry, super dry sometimes too.
Oh, very dry. but as a kid, I got it.
I loved it.
Was the cool thing. And memories of going on vacation, we would drive up to, during the summer, we had a camper, and my dad would haul us up to, the Chico Redding area, where you'd still get games on the radio, because you just flip over to the affiliate. So listening to games in like 86, 87, to Hank Greenwald, and then going up to like Oregon and Washington and trying to find the affiliates up there, which was always hard to do. But he had a book, and I don't remember what year it was published, but it was called This Copyrighted Broadcast.
Oh, yes. I remember this book. I've never read this. I need to find this book.
Well,
it's not that
go
good.
Buying it now. No, I haven't read it. That's the problem. I haven't read it yet. And I just punched it up on Amazon, because I had it. I was going to buy a used copy a few years back, and I didn't pull the trigger. Now you can get the hard copy on Amazon for $768, or you can get a used copy for $93.
Oh,
so that's what
God.
I'm saying. Don't
Kindle?
Get it.
They don't get the
no Kindle.
Oh, no, man.
No Kindle version. So that's a tough one. If there was a Kindle version, I would definitely have it. There's one collectible version for $100. So yeah, I don't know why that one is so hard to get. It came out in 1999. And I should have grabbed it. I had it on my Christmas list 1 year, never got it. And then I forgot about it. So,
yeah.
But anyway, absolute legend, absolute Giants legend, the cigar, right? I mean, you can never forget the cigar. He'd have a cigar after games and stuff, and maybe during games. I don't know. We never saw him. So,
all right. So I'll quickly go through some before I get to my next one that I want your color commentary on. So Phil Stone, I remember Phil Stone.
Vaguely.
He's there in 86.
Now, I didn't have Giants vision, so I don't know if he was...
Well, we'll get to Giants vision here in a second. Okay. Joe Morgan, 1986 to 1993. Not too many people know that he did a lot of their games before he went to ESPN to work with John Miller. And Joe Morgan, very much in the Giants zone era, Giants vision era from where basically you could see all the games on TV when they were away. But when they were home, you kind of had to pay like a subscription price through your cable in order to watch their home games.
Yeah. And we didn't have cable. I think we talked about this a couple shows ago. We didn't have cable and we didn't get anything till 95. We got DirecTV. And at that point it was Sportsnet West or something like that. But and Giants Vision had gone away. But every time I saw that Giants Vision logo, I would get anxiety because I knew that there were so many visual games at home that I was missing. And I, because you know, when you had KTVU and that's all you had.
Now we're so spoiled. We can watch a game like every single one of them.
Yeah. And when I had a KTVU and the antenna, that's all we had. It's like you got road games.
Yep.
And you just didn't get those home games unless we went to the playoffs or unless they decided to pick up a Saturday game with Vin Scully and Joe Gargiola.
Mm-hmm.
And those were always fun.
All right. So Ron Fairley, you mentioned Ron. Ron goes from he's there in 87. According to Wikipedia, he's there in 87 and then he goes away for 2 years and comes back 90 through 92. I don't remember that part. I just remember my dad going like, I can't believe Ron Fairley is doing color commentary because he's a stupid Dodger.
Exactly. Well, Ron Fairley and Wayne Hagen, those two guys together were a lot of fun. They actually brought a lot of light to the broadcast. They talked a lot about baseball technique and they always had a lot of fun, interesting stories. And so I spent a lot of evenings of, supposed to be in bed. So faking sleep while I had my little transistor radio underneath my pillow so I can listen to some of the later games. And so those guys, you know, they brought a lot of life to my fake sleep back in the day.
And then this is the one I wanted to ask you to see if you knew. So Dwayne Kuiper, this says 1985. I don't remember him actually doing television in 1985, though I wonder if he did like pregame stuff or something. And then through 1992, and then he leaves for a year. Do you remember where he went?
You know, somebody, let me punch it up real quick. Somebody posted this on our YouTube channel and corrected me on this. I had posted a video. Let me see if I can do this quickly. I had posted a video. No, I'm not going to be able to find it quickly. I apologize. Anyways, I had posted a video and had said something about, I believed Ron Fairley had left and gone to Colorado for a year and then came back. And this person corrected me and said, no, it was Kuiper,
right,
who actually went to Colorado.
Yes.
And I don't remember that at all.
He did. He went to Colorado for a year. I don't remember why exactly.
And 93 was Colorado's first year.
Yeah, I think, you know, they probably just like threw a ton of money at him to do it. But then I was kind of sad, you know, so I'm growing up. They would do these pregame shows on the Giant. Like if you were listening to the Giants broadcast, you would. This is even before the pregame show starts. So the first one that they had was the Dwayne Kuiper show, and he'd do like 15 minutes. He's still a player, and they'd go over some things on the show. Then when he retired, it became the Bob Brenly show. Yeah. And so Bob Renly would do 15 minutes before every game, and the, you know, the KBR guys would be able to talk to him a little bit. And then it became the Brett Butler show. I don't remember what happened after the Brett Butler show, but they would do that with players, and they would do like little 15 minute hits before the game started. And Kuiper was so good that this was literally his career. And look, Brenly did broadcasting too, right? He still does.
Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah. He's pretty good at broadcasting. So it was kind of like a little bit of a tryout in a sense for both of those guys. I don't know if Butler's coaching, so I don't know if he ever did any broadcasting, but he was Butler's kind of charming guy.
He was. Yeah. And you know what? He was Brett Butler was a manager at the AAA affiliate of the Diamondbacks here in Reno, the Aces. And God, this town loved him. Yeah. He was a first manager of the team in 2009 when the team was conceived. And this town just absolutely loved that guy. And it was so fun to go. I got to interrupt a conversation between Brett Butler and a gentleman in the stands who I recognized immediately, and I went down and got an autograph from both of them. So I got an autograph from Butler and Willie McGee. They were having a nice conversation.
What
down
was Willie in front doing there?
I don't know, but it was so cool. So I ran down and I go, oh my God. So on the back of one of my tickets, the ticket for that game, I got both of their autographs.
Nice.
It was pretty cool. And here at that time I was like, you know, 40 years old, and I'm like, hey, yeah, get your autograph. Like, who's this guy?
All right. So you mentioned Fizyak already. So we had Ted Robinson, 1993 to 2001.
I love Ted Robinson. I thought he did an awesome job. And if you're a Ted Robinson fan, and also an ATP tennis fan,
yes,
like I am, you get to hear him call so many tennis games, and he is just phenomenal. So good to listen to. The guy, he knows his stuff. He's so smooth.
He can pretty much do any sport.
He could, and I would enjoy it. Yeah.
He did the 49ers for several years before Greg Papa came back to do the 49ers. So Kruko comes in at 93. Everyone knows Kruko. John Miller comes in 97. Obviously, everyone knows John Miller. Do you remember the great Joe Angel?
Absolutely. I remember Joe Angel. He came over from the Orioles, and him and John Miller broadcast together over in Baltimore, and they had a good rapport. So they were good together. I don't know why he didn't last as long as he did. I want to say there was controversy, but I don't remember that. But I liked him. I thought him and Miller together on the radio were awesome. Because I think he did some of the radio side for a little bit. It's listed here he did television, but they were both fun together. I think the issue might have been, and again, this is just me saying this, this is not controversial, but they sounded very similar.
Mm-hmm.
Miller and Angel sounded really close to each other. So sometimes, especially on radio, it was really hard to figure out who exactly was talking sometimes, because they had the same cadence and same voice almost. But I liked Joe Angel. I thought he was fun.
Joe Angel did... Hasta la vista, pelota.
Yes.
And doesn't John Miller do that sometimes too?
Yeah, John Miller says adios, pelota.
Oh, there you go.
Okay. Yeah. And
you're right.
Angel would say hasta la vista, pelota.
Okay. Yeah. I very much remember those 2 years of Joe Angel, and Giants went to the World Series that 1 year. Tim McCarver did some games for the Giants on
that
TV that year.
I enjoy that. Not a McCarver guy, not a fan.
Then Greg Papa came in for a few years, 2004, 2006. Dave Fleming comes in 2006, and then Affelt and Javi Lopez come in 2017. So quickly, we'll go through the radio side. Do you remember David Glass?
I do not.
Okay, so David Glass.
I looked at that name and I don't remember that.
David Glass is in the same years as Greenwald and Gary Park on the TV side. So he was right in that same time frame. I very much remember David Glass because he would have been doing stuff with Greenwald when I, like, literally the season that I started paying attention. You mentioned Wayne Hagan. He was a radio only guy for 2 years, 87 to 88. I think he eventually took Kuiper's spot in Colorado.
That sounds right. So I think I mixed him and Fairly up, I think, on the YouTube channel. So that's old man memory.
Yeah. So Hagen does Oakland A's 81-84. Does Giants 87-88, does the White Sox from 89-91, and does the Rockies from 93-2002. So yeah, he replaced Kiper, or maybe he worked with Kiper. So he may not have replaced him, but I think he worked with Kiper in that one season, and then goes on to the Cardinals 2003-2006, and then to the Mets 2008-2011. So that's pretty cool, because I always wondered, I liked him, and I wondered where he went after that. But so he had a nice long career. Barry Tompkins did some stuff for the radio side in 1993. Another guy like Ted Robinson who does like tons of different sports. And Barry Tompkins, here's some great trivia of Barry Tompkins. He calls, I think it is Balboa versus Drago in Rocky IV.
Oh, wow. That's awesome.
I think he's on the call for that fight.
That is so cool.
And then so obviously then Kruko, Miller, Fleming, and then Greg Papa again. So, you know, lots of memorable announcers, and I just love, you know, kind of going through that stuff and remembering guys. Like, you know, if someone tells me, oh man, you know, I used to like it when Wayne Hagen was doing, I'm like, what? Like, how do you remember that name? I thought I only knew that name.
Well, and a side note on Fleming, in 2000, he was with the Visalia Oaks in single A, and I did a few games, not too many games. I was kind of being phased out and my own doing. I wasn't, just kind of wasn't in that path anymore, but I did some games for the San Jose Giants in 2000. And so I crossed paths with Fleming. I don't remember many conversations. I think we just basically shook hands, said hi. You didn't have a whole lot of time to sit and talk to the other broadcasters because you were getting your pregame ready, talking to your engineers, doing your interviews and everything else. But Fleming was with Visalia when I was in San Jose right at the end there. So that was kind of fun.
And then
he was with Stanford too.
Yeah. Do you remember Robert Portnoy's story about Dave Fleming?
I don't.
Okay. So Rob Portnoy, someone who we went to school with, we did San Jose State Radio with, he's in what, New Mexico, right?
Yeah. And we'd love to have him on the show. So we are going to get him on the show because he has some good San Jose Giants stories as well.
Yeah. So Rob is, you know, he's a broadcaster. He's been doing it forever. He was like a really good golfer back in the day, right?
Yeah, he was. Yeah.
I think that's what he was like going to school for or something. So anyways, I had this conversation with Rob and he's like, you know, Fleming, you know how Fleming got his job? And I was like, I just assume he sent in like his tape or whatever. And he's like, well, the Giants were actually looking at his partner. And so Fleming was doing games at Stanford with somebody else. And then they heard Fleming and they fell in love with Fleming. So like they didn't even they weren't even looking to him. They were listening to the tapes for whoever he was working with, thinking that that was someone they wanted to bring on the team. And eventually it was like, no, this guy's really good. And they brought Fleming in. I always thought was a ridiculous story. But Rob told me that. And look, you know, Rob did minor league baseball for years. He got to what was the Milwaukee, he was in the Brewers organization, right?
No, he was actually in the I hate to say it, but he was in the Dodgers organization with Albuquerque. And then he would come so the last few years he did Triple A baseball. He'd come here once we got our Aces team, and then we'd go out to dinner and drinks,
cool,
and stuff afterwards. So yeah, so we got to hang out a few times. I'd hang out in the booth with him and just stand in the back and
that's cool.
Reminisce. So it was kind of fun. And then now he's with New Mexico. Because of COVID, we don't get to get together right now, but he's invited us out to some basketball games because New Mexico comes here to play against UNR. So we've gone to some football games on his tickets. He's got some tickets for us every time he comes into town, so it's fun. You know, it's fun to hang out and see him, and it doesn't always work out. Sometimes, you know, with kids, you got birthday parties, all kinds of other crazy stuff going on. But I'd love to have him on the show and just, you know, kind of tell us about his AAA travels, and because we haven't talked too much about that, so that'd be kind of fun.
Yeah, no, we should talk to him. I mean, it's been outside of our fantasy sports leagues. I haven't talked to him probably since the early to mid 2000s. So that's been a while.
Yeah.
So yeah, we'll get him on because he's a professional broadcaster. So legit. He's a legit broadcaster.
Yeah, we're just playing the part.
we're just living our dreams, and he that's his livelihood. So I love that about him too because he's stuck with it for sure. All right, so that's gonna be it for here. We'll be back next week, and we'll be talking about the story of players and owners and whether or not we're gonna get the season that we think and everything that's gonna happen. I'm sure something will come up in Giants land that we'll be able to talk about. One thing I was gonna bring up, someone who I will not miss seeing 18 times a year, whatever, is Nolan Arenado.
That's right.
Signs with St. Louis. So we'll see him a few less times this baseball season, because he just destroys us every time we see him for whatever reason.
And the nice thing is, if since he's with the Cardinals, if we do see them in the playoffs, we have a tendency to knock out the Cardinals in the playoffs, so we can knock him out and it'll be fun.
Absolutely.
That'll happen this year, right?
100%. Okay, so we'll see you next week. So for Brad, I'm Garrett. See you when we see you. Peace out.
Peace.